Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into episode 189 of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, powered by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, the birthday boy, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud? Happy birthday.
Thank you. It's good to be back on. It's been a while. You were sick, and then you were in Florida, and then we had a lot going on in my family this week, so wife was in the hospital for a couple of days, so it's really good to be back. Some normalcy. The microphone feels normal to me, so this is just normalcy back in the swing, and hopefully, gosh, it's been a weird couple of months for us, just like on and off having a bunch of crap going on.
Right.
And hopefully that stuff's all behind us now, so we can just, you know, roll with our normal podcast schedule, you know, and do what we love most, and that's talking about baseball. So appreciate everybody that's reached out. Really do appreciate it. And my wife is doing better. We're at home now after a couple of days in the hospital, and so everything is better, which is good. And again, normalcy, this just feels right. So I'm glad to be back.
Y'all can't see it, but when Chris was saying that the mic feels normal, he was caressing his microphone a little bit. No, I'm just kidding. It is good to hear that your wife's doing better, that she's home resting now. That was obviously never ideal. It was a scary situation, but glad to hear that she's doing better. My voice is still on the up and up. It's better than it was last episode. If anybody heard my voice at the end of last episode, that was actually pretty funny. I went back and listened to it, but still trying to get my voice back, but I'm getting there. It's a little better every day. So hopefully next couple episodes, I'll be back to not sounding like I smoke 5 packs of cigarettes a day. But for now, I guess it is passable. But we have a really fun podcast. So we get a couple podcasts right in a row here. Because there's been since the last time we recorded, been a lot of fun stuff going on. But obviously, we got spring training games in full swing. We got the World Baseball Classic ramping up. So a lot of kind of just news and notes to go over. So we will do pitchers this episode and hitters next episode. But before we get into the episode, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter, Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04, and our show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Check out my Patreon for more work from me and Chris's Substack for more work from him. And before we get into the show, we want to say a quick word about our friends at Underdog Fantasy. If you sign up using the promo code TOOLSHED, you'll receive a 100% deposit match up to $100 that can be used for any of their fun fantasy games, including MLB best balls, individual player pick'ems across all sports, and so much more. Sign up today using the promo code TOOLSHED at play.underdogfantasy.com/P-the-toolshed. All right. Unfortunately, the first bit of news here, obviously everyone knows about it, but not very pleasant. We're starting off on a bad foot here, a sour note, but Andrew Painter injured, left his, felt some elbow soreness last start. Kind of been hearing some rumblings. I don't know, nothing's been made public yet by the team, which is never good. If there was good news, they would have said it, that first day after or second day after, but been a few days now. All the rumblings are that not necessarily Tommy John yet, but there's always that concern when you leave with your elbow, forearm, that there could be Tommy John, which obviously for a guy that, for any top pitching prospect is not great, but especially for a guy that was, like, the hype around Painter was so massive right now. Obviously with the dominant year he had last year, in the number one pitching prospect discussion with him and G-Rod, maybe making his debut, maybe opening the rotation. So this is a bummer, but how are you kind of handling the Andrew Painter upcoming news here, Chris?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, this is just another thing to knock on pitching prospects. We have the top four, and they're so good and so unique that it was hard not to be extremely high on them. But the acronym rings true. There's no such thing as a pitching prospect, because it feels like every time we fall in love with a pitching prospect, something like this tends to happen. And obviously, we hope that Painter has a speedy recovery, gets back on the mound. I'll tell you, I am very skeptical that, well, I know that he's going to rest. Like, we know he's going to rest for a little bit and not throw. The whole situation is just bizarre with his agent getting involved. And I mean, we know Boris is Boris and whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's just the whole situation's weird. Like, why they haven't come out and said something, because they know, like, they're going to come. They've been saying they don't know that they know the results. And that's the frustrating thing. But my fear is that best case, he doesn't throw until, or he doesn't pitch in game until like mid-June or July, like, because he's got to have ramp-up time after resting too. So, like, he may not throw in game until mid-June or July. Then if he has another setback, like, we're talking about more and more time. And if he does need surgery, then with all this delayed, he ends up missing all of next year too, which is the really concerning aspect, that we could potentially lose Andrew Painter for 2023 and 2024 if the worst case happens. So, if that is the case, then his dynasty value tanks. Like, obviously, there's a lot still up in the air right now, so you may still be able to trade him. And honestly, I might entertain it, which sucks. Like, I really do like Painter. I think he can be elite. And long-term, he may. He's 19. But I will say that with this kind of injury, when we see the pitchers we've seen rest, it doesn't go well for him. Like, I'm just looking at the arms that have tried to pitch through this, and some of them are, like, have worked out well. Like, I will say that Zach Gallen is a major success story of resting, and it worked. Like, Gallen's been through a lot of stuff, and he's been good. But then I think about the Glasnows and Lance McCullers Juniors and all those guys that just can't stay healthy. It's just on and off the field. And if the surgery is needed, then I hate to delay any longer, and that's my fear right now. So we'll see.
Yeah, no, it's tough, man. Like, I think it would depend on, if I had Andrew Painter, I think it would just depend on my contention window. If I'm a contender now, yeah, I'd be looking at maybe, trade him to a rebuilding team for more of a win now piece. But let's assume, like, what we think is, like, the future here, what we think is going to happen with Painter. Let's assume that's reality. How far down, like, let's just go one for one, trading Painter for a pitching prospect. Like, how far down your pitching prospect ranks would you go? Like, let's say you had Painter, I came up and offered you, let's go Kyle Harrison. What would you say?
Oh, that's a tough one. Harrison's a weird one for me. I was literally thinking through, like, where I would put him, like, in the instance that he did need TJ. And if it was the case where it was later and he missed all of next year too, we didn't see him until 2025. I think in that case, like he does, I would take Harrison for him. Like he'd be outside my top 50 prospects. I thought about Max Meyer, who I was never as high on Meyer as I was Painter. So
right,
a little bit of difference there, but how far I dropped Meyer after he had the TJ. So it's going to be a significant drop if Painter does need the surgery. Now, I want you to hear us loud and clear that we're not saying that he does. Like, this is speculation right now.
Right,
like,
yeah.
He could get down the road. But there is a concerning injury. That's what we know. There's a concerning injury right now. So I think he would probably drop to, like, 75 overall in my prospect rankings, which puts him in, I'm looking at, like, other arms in that range. Like, would I have him above Tink Hintz? Like, yeah. Probably it'd be close, like Bryce Miller, like some of these guys. Like, I don't know. Like, that's the weird thing. Like, where would I put him if worst came to worst? And yeah, I would. So to be blunt, like, I take Harrison for him. I take Brandon Pfaadt for him. I take Gavin Williams for him. I take Hunter Brown, Taj Bradley, Gavin Stone. All that tier, I think I would take for him.
Yeah, I was going to ask about Pfaadt. Obviously, you've been a big supporter of Pfaadt, and Pfaadt looks pretty damn good so far in spring training. But yeah, I think. For me, I think I'd probably drop him down into kind of probably my Daniel Espino range, where kind of similar. We don't know, you know, how much of Espino we see this year. That's still kind of up in the air. So obviously it could be a long-term injury for Painter. Hey, maybe Espino turns into a more long-term thing as well. It already is long-term. But I feel like he'd be in that range for me, you know, kind of similar as, you know, both elite pitching prospects. That would be like top three or four. Without injury, you're even top two. And then, you know, what do we get from them this year? That uncertainty, that risk. So I think I'd put them down in that Espino range, which probably is, I think, around 60 to 70. Yeah, so I feel like we're in that same range. But luckily, you know, Mick Abel looked pretty good the other day. You know, hopefully Mick Abel can take that step forward if we do lose Painter. But again, all speculation. But I've seen this movie before, and the movie usually doesn't end well. So hopefully I'm wrong. You know, hopefully he's fine, rest for a month or two. And, you know, like you mentioned, Chris, maybe we see him second half of the year. But, yeah, I'm holding my breath. Let's see. Let's just wait for some concrete news to come out before we overreact too much. But something we can not overreact to, but react to, Hunter Brown, obviously very talented arm. We all know that. Big fastball, the two breakers he can miss bats with. But command control has been the thing that's kind of held him back. Like, I think this is a guy that could have been even higher, even up into like the Kyle Harrison range, but it's kind of like always a rung below because command was an issue, and that's still been an issue. He walked 5 the other day. So obviously long term, I'm not, you know, dropping him down my rankings or anything like that. But, you know, I wonder, Chris, if he makes as big of an impact this year as we think. Obviously when McCullers already hurt, shocker. You know, Brown's going to get that chance. So that's great. That's promising that you give him this little, you know, short-term boost in value. But I wonder if there's going to be that more growing pains than there would be for like a G-Rod or something like that. People, guys that have better command than Brown. So I'm not saying sell him, but I just like, you know, obviously we're talking about Dynasty right now. But again, a redraft setting, I feel like his ADP is getting pushed up too high. And this is a guy that I was loving the ADP when it was like 250. Now it's like 175 or even higher. And I think the value is getting pushed a bit too high. There's still some kinks to work out.
Yeah, I agree. He's struggled to find the strike zone at all. And that's pretty concerning to me. And that's a big part of the game. I think we underrate that, like, stuff's really good, but if he's going to walk too many guys, then like that's a major issue in itself. And they have depth. Like, it's not like the Astros, like, have to push him into that spot. Yeah, McCullers is hurt, so that obviously opens the door. That doesn't mean that Brown's going to be willing to take it. Like, we've seen the command improve. You look early on in his career, he was, I mean, in low A, in 2019, he ran a 17.6% walk rate. And then in double A in 2021, it was 13.4%. That's too high in itself, even improving there. You know, last year was much better. I mean, 10.6%. in 106 AAA innings, like, yeah, it's still on the high side, but it's livable with Brown's stuff. And then with what we're seeing this spring, it's just has me quite concerned. Like, if he is going to put so many guys on base, you're talking about a higher whip and definitely a higher ERA because he's going to have more runners on base. So Brown's got to throw more strikes. He's got to live in the zone a bit more, and he's got to know where his pitches are going. And right now, it's early. It's only been a couple of games, and he's only thrown, I think, two innings this spring. So he can't get deep into starts. He's walking so many, but he's walked five batters in two innings, and he's hit a batter too. So six guys on base in two innings just through walks. Like, that's going to cost you pretty bad. So yeah, I am definitely concerned about what we've seen so far from Hunter Brown.
Now, as your, obviously we can't overreact over two innings, but has your long-term thought on Brown changed at all? And not just on these two innings, but, you know, obviously the command is an issue, and like maybe we kind of, you know, we have a tendency, and I'm guilty of this too, you know, we look at the big stuff when we kind of, like, oh yeah, there's the command issue. We kind of like push it to the side. Like, you know, hopefully he figures it out, but maybe it's a bigger issue than we thought it was and holds him back a little more than we thought. So I still like him long-term. I think he's going to be a very talented arm, but I don't know. This is a red flag that needs to be, you know, improved upon. And I'm not saying he needs to turn into, you know, some pinpoint control specialist or anything like that, but if he's going to walk 10-plus, you know, percent batters and just not locate his pitches as well as he can, we've seen how that limits very talented arms that are, you know, have just as much talent as Hunter Brown. So I don't know. I'm not dropping down my rankings, but this is concerning. So I don't know. Something to monitor moving forward for sure.
Yeah. Like, it's not like a overreaction, I think, to have some concerns to what we've seen. But at the same time, like, I'm not dropping him in rankings, but it still needs to be monitored pretty closely. And for this year, I think it does matter much more than we'll say long term.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Moving over to Mr. Brady Singer, you know, I've been personally pretty, not critical, but not quite as high as most on Singer and a lot of rankings, Dynasty and Redraft for this year, because I'm not a big fan of two-pitch guys when, well, if the two pitches are elite, like DeGrom, like Spencer Strider, who went, you know, at 11 swing and misses today in three innings or whatever it was, fine, but Singer, his sinker slider is, my slider's pretty good. It's not elite. Sinker is solid. Again, not elite. So, you know, a lot of the ERA indicators were higher. So I was feeling some regression, but his changeup, which he only threw a little under 8% of the time last year. And, you know, while the batting average against and slug, you know, were fine, the whiff rate was only 9.1%. Threw it pretty much only against lefties, but after his last start a couple days ago, in which he tossed three shutout innings, two hits, no walks, five Ks, Ann Rogers, a beat reporter for MLB.com for the Royals, tweeted a quote from Singer himself saying, quote, "The changeup was probably the best it's ever been in my entire career. I think that's the biggest takeaway." So if that changeup is going to be a legit third offering, you know, more incorporated into his pitch mix, even if it's just like 15-16%, something like that, that, you know, I'm not gonna go bonkers over Singer, but I would feel more confident in buying into Singer long term. But what are your thoughts on Singer on the changeup, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty crucial to his success. And you look, and like I said, pretty much two pitches between the sinker and the slider. Sinker's obviously not a bat-missing pitch. But there were some good quotes from him after that start, and I'm not going to lie, I'm a bit intrigued, and I have been. Like, I really liked and bought into what Singer did last year, and if he throws that changeup just, we'll say, 20% of the time, then that's just a huge thing for him. And I personally think that he can be a really solid high floor arm. He's probably never going to be like an ace caliber pitcher, but I think it's a good ratio kind of anchor that you can have in your rotation, especially for fantasy purposes. He's also made some tweaks to his sinker. He's really adjusted the release point a bit. And so it's getting less drop and a little bit more ride. So I'd watch that a bit pretty closely. but I am intrigued by the changes that he's made. And I do think that it could be pretty useful.
Yeah, I said if he can get that third offering, like I said, he threw it last year. It wasn't effective. It was seldom used. Like if he, I said, double that usage rate, it doesn't have to be a weapon. Just be a serviceable third offering to offset the sinker slider. And I think he could. I still don't think he's going to take another step forward, but maybe he just settles in as like a, you know, mid-3 ERA guy, 24-25% K rate. It's like a pretty solid arm. I think he can maintain what we saw last year. I'd be a little more confident in that as opposed to, you know, maybe him regressing this year, which is what I kind of thought. But we'll see. I want to see how that changeup looks the rest of spring. And maybe I'll move him up my rankings a little bit. But now let's move over to some velocity kind of risers and fallers. You know, a few notable ones. Obviously, there's a lot more than this, but kind of like the three big names. Jesus Luzardo, up. Reed Detmers, up. Alek Manoah, down. Before we talk about these players, Chris, you know, obviously it's early. You know, all these guys are going to pitch a handful of innings. You know, what do you take away from early spring velocity, you know, rise or fall? Or is like, what is a, you know, noticeable, you know, whether it's up or down, what is kind of like that number where it's like, is it a mile, you know, per hour up, mile and a half, two, or down, where it's like, all right, that catches your eye. And like, and how do you kind of like process this? Like, what is your thought process around it?
Well, I think it varies like case to case. And, you know, this is never an ideal situation where you want to see anybody down, especially when they're down a pretty significant chunk like Manoah's been. And that's the frustrating thing to me, is like, oh, like he's down a good bit. Now, there was a lot of talk. It was like, he's a slow ramper upper, whatever you want to call it. I looked back at his spring training last year, and then people are like, oh, it was a short spring. He had to be ramped up. Like, he averaged 94 in three of his four spring starts, and he was 93.7 in the other. He's been way down. And, you know, maybe that's his own doing. Like, Chris Bassitt was like 4 miles an hour down. I was like, holy cow, like, what is this? And then they came out and said that Bassitt was intentionally doing that, like just going out there and just like doing his thing and like trying to really work on his tempo and stuff like that. So like, okay, like this maybe makes a bit more sense. At least you can put something with it. But we haven't heard anything on Manoah. So it's like, oh, like I'd like to at least know something. And we haven't really gotten that. So I don't know what to do with Manoah. The guys that are up, I think you have to question sometimes, well, is it just a small sample type thing? Or what is it exactly? But I'd say regardless, even if they're doing it in two inning stints, like you can look and see like where a pitcher topped out last year. And if that's higher, then that's obviously encouraging. But I'm encouraged by any velocity gainer. I wish there was a better way to track it. Like I'm actually in the process right now of trying to pull like all of the data from that's on Savant and then like, you know, compare it to last year. I don't have that complete stuff, a lot of lookups, and I have to do all the pitch types and all that stuff. But regardless, I am pretty intrigued by those guys that are up, like especially Detmers. Like I think Detmers and another one, Patrick Sandoval, which I'm both of those guys I'm very intrigued by.
Yeah, it was Sandoval kind of flew under the radar a little bit. He had a very strong second half of last season. I think you look at the overall stat line, you'd be like, oh wow, that was a pretty yeah. good season. So and Reed Detmers, you know, a couple of angels here, you know. Reed Detmers, what was he sitting? What was his velocity last year? As I pulled that up, it was, where was 93.2. So seeing him, that's, you know, that's okay velocity. But I think if you could see him, you know, get 94, 95 consistently this year, along with that slider that he has, you know, good curveball as well. I don't know how high I'd push Detmers up, but that would definitely be very encouraging. You know, Luzardo up as well, but a mile and a half on his sinker is a curveball, no sinker, changeup, and four seamer. So, you know, again, I don't I try not to overreact because, like you mentioned, you know, it's just a, you know, a couple innings early on in spring, but it's something that I definitely keep my, like, I'm going to watch more closely, like Detmer's next start, Lizardo's next start. Let's see where it's at there. See where it's at, you know, 6 days after that. So just something to kind of like monitor and, you know, don't overreact to these things. Unless it's like you mentioned, like.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I forget who it was, but we've talked about a lot of and tweeted about a lot of, you know, velocity gains and followers. But like I tweeted about someone a few days ago where it was like their average fastball velocity was higher than their max last year. So like that is definitely, I forget who that was. I wish I remember who. There was so many of them. I can't remember which one that was, but like that is noticeable. Like, all right. They top out at, let's say, 94.3 and their average was 94.6. I'm like, all right, you know, obviously that's not a fluke thing. That's not a, you know, short stint thing. It's definitely noticeable. So yeah, definitely something to keep an eye on. But yeah, Detmer, Sandoval, Lizardo, Manoah being down. And the thing with Manoah too, it's not like this was his first start.
No.
His velocity was higher. His velo was down a little bit. It was like half mile an hour, 0.7, stuff like that in his first outing. And then it went down further in the second one. So again, it could be by design, hard to say, but we're just going off what we see. And I think it went down further in the second start to all around 2-ish, you know, 1.5 to 2 miles an hour on all of his offerings. That is concerning to me. So we'll see. But again, it's just something to really just monitor moving forward here. But going over to some positive stuff here with Kodai Senga debuting, and I would have been at that start, but I had the labor mixed auction, which was an absolute blast. But yeah, missed out on that, even though I saw, you know, Jordan Walker the previous 2 days just go bonkers, which we'll talk about next episode. But, you know, Senga kind of, I don't know, he came as advertised. What was your kind of your first thoughts on Kodai Senga, Chris?
Well, I do think there was definitely some nerves involved. We're talking about a very hyped prospect coming over, and there's so many expectations, and Mets fans have high expectations. Like are going to be expecting a lot out of him. I heard there was 300-400 people just surrounding the bullpen trying to see his bullpen session before. And you can imagine like how well somebody wants to perform when it's their first, you know, big league, I wouldn't say big league, but stateside start. And there was a mixed bag. I thought there was some good. I mean, the good was that his fastball velo was there. I mean, topped out near 99, averaged 97, like good spin, a lot of good things on the fastball, 30% CSW. That's excellent on a four seam. I thought the secondaries looked good. And obviously he threw the fork a couple times. He ghosted Jordan Walker on it. You get it because it's a ghost fork. But again, I mean, I think there was some good, other than he just really struggled to stay in the zone. He lived in the zone 40% of the time. Just didn't throw enough strikes, to be honest. And I think that cost him, like the strike percent was just so low. So if this is fixable, like I'm not making any judgment calls on Senga like right away, because I do think there's a lot of nerves. And I think that there's things that he work on improve, and he may look completely different at next time out. So I ultimately really like Senga, and you know, I think it's based on what your expectations were. Some people were just like crazy high expectations, but like I've always thought he was like a SP3 type, and I think he's gonna be a solid SP3 type at that. So like if that's what you're believing, then he's okay. Like he's gonna be fine. So I don't know. It's all about the way you look at it, and it's different for everybody.
One thing that has me a little bit encouraged is the fact that like where he landed, like with the Mets, and for two reasons: A, all the veteran arms they have there, obviously led by, you know, Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander, also, again, you know, Carlos Carrasco, who's the other one there, Jose Quintana. So all the veteran arms on that staff kind of going to help him, you know, learn the, you know, ins and outs of being a major league pitcher. Obviously, he's a professional already in Japan, but, and then also the fact that he has, you know, at least Verlander and Scherzer, he has to come over and be the man right away. He can be a mid rotation guy. Like, there's not a ton of pressure on him right now. So, you know, I like the stuff, like the ghost fork. He got Jordan Walker swinging on that. It was absolutely beautiful. The bottom just falls out. You know, I think it was fine. Like, I was, you know, fairly impressed. Like, obviously, there's still some tinkering, some adjustments to be made, but, you know, I think he kind of came as advertised, and, you know, nothing that, you know, deters me or, you know, or wowed me, but he's a talented arm. I'm not going hog wild on him, but yeah, I think he's going to be a guy that's, you know, top 40, top 50-ish pitcher and a very good, you know, SP3, SP4 for your fantasy team. So yeah, I came away, you know, fairly impressed with that start. Another person that I've been pretty impressed with through his two outings so far, Trevor Rogers. 5 innings, no runs, 6 strikeouts, you know, kind of looking like, you know, 2021 Rogers. And, you know, I don't know if that fully comes back, but I think for on the pitching side of things, Rogers is one of the best dynasty buys right now, because like, that season wasn't a fluke. You know, whether that was the best we'll see, I don't know, but that wasn't a fluke. Very talented arm. Obviously, there was some off the field, you know, personal issues, you know, some with his family and whatnot that were, you know, obviously, you know, as we all know, we have families here. They can take a toll on anybody mentally, especially when you're trying to perform at a super high level as a professional athlete, as a major league pitcher. So I don't blame him for having some struggles. So I am definitely still very much in on Rogers. I'm not saying he's going to be a top 25 arm again, but definitely better than what he showed last year. And I'm looking to buy him in every dynasty league I'm in right now.
Yeah, that's pretty fair. I mean, I think it's a good time to buy. I think the cost is going to keep soaring up, but overall, like, I'm really pleased with what he's done. And you mentioned it. It's, you know, at some point, it's like not a fluke. Like, we can call that season a fluke, but you don't really fluke a full season in baseball. Like, that's kind of the point of the game. It's like they play so many games, and Rogers did it over a full season. So I don't believe what he did was fluky. I still think he's got an elite changeup. Like, I believe in the stuff with Trevor Rogers. I think you're right. I do think he's a really good buy. So I'm all aboard getting him if you can. It just depends on the cost in Dynasty. And certainly in redraft, I think you should draft him at his current cost because it's pretty cheap.
Yeah, I think ADP is like, what, 230, 240, yeah, something like that. And yeah, I definitely think that his value is only going to keep going up. Like you mentioned, if he keeps looking good here in spring, never a couple of good outings, cost is going to go up. So I'd recommend, like, right now, go ahead. If you want him, go out and, you know, have that chat with your fellow league mate, whoever has Rogers in your league, because I think the value is just going to keep going up from here. All right, we set a lot of other names on the list here, kind of jumping all over the place, but let's go to some of the top arms here. You know, we got Shane McClanahan, Chris Sale. You know, Chris Sale was pumping 96. I don't know if that was just the hot gun. JetBlue Park has been known to have a slightly hot gun, but, you know, Sale looked all right. McClanahan, 2 outings so far. Velo matches last year. Everything looks good there. You know, I know there's been a lot of concern around, well, both these guys, but we'll start with McClanahan. That's made him kind of drop down to, like, you know, SP 8 to 12 in drafts and, you know, drop down a little bit, you know, down dynasty rankings. Are you concerned with McClanahan, Chris? You know, where does he fall in your dynasty, your pitcher dynasty rankings? And are you still, you know, are you worried? Are you still as high on him as you were, you know, before all the, you know, second half issues popped up last year?
Yeah, I mean, he's still, like, firmly in, like, the top tier of arms for dynasty. I do think that Burns is still SP1. And after that, you can go a lot of ways. Like, I have Alcantara, Nola, Woodruff, McClanahan all kind of in that same range. So, to me, you can make an argument for any of them at number 2 behind Burns. But until Burns proves otherwise, like, he is my number 1. So, yeah, so far, it's so good for McClanahan. I think, like, seeing what you want to see out of him. Ultimately, like, I'm not as concerned. Like, obviously, the health stuff at the end of the year was a bit concerning, but he's been pumping. Like you said, the spring looked really good so far. So, no, I'm not overly concerned, especially considering the slider velo was up a little bit. Like, everything you kind of want to see out of him, I think we saw. And if that continues, then yeah, I'm all on board.
You know, kind of like what we were talking about in our Dynasty Crystal Ball episode a few episodes ago, you know, Burns is number one, and he's still fairly, you know, young-ish. You know, he's number one until he proves otherwise. Or, I kind of should have added this last time, or until someone takes it from him. And I think there's really only one major league arm right now that I think could, and that's McClanahan. Take that number one spot. Like, obviously, maybe Strider could. Who knows? But, or maybe, you know, maybe G-Rod or Painter or whoever else in a few years. But right now, like, I love Sandy Alcantara, but he's like, I don't think he'll ever be number one. He'll be, like, you know, 3-4, something like that. Nola, same thing. Love Nola as well. Woodruff, etc. But McClanahan's that one where he has the age on his side. He's younger by, I think, 2 or 3 years than Burns, and has shown that he can be just as good or even slightly better at times than Corbin Burns. Obviously, he gets the ground balls, all the whiff rates on all of his offerings. So if McClanahan's fine, and kind of, you know, it's early, but he looks fine so far, if you can get him for any discount, even if it's 98 cents on the dollar, like if you can, you know, maybe trade like a Woodruff for him or something like that, someone that I have a couple spots below my rankings, like, I'm still all in on McClanahan. Like I said, this guy has all, like, and he's shown it. He's can be the number one guy. He's been that number one guy at times, and to the point where I was debating moving him, like, kind of mid-season, moving him ahead of Burns. And everyone knows I love Corbin Burns. I've been, you know, on the Burns train ever since 2020. So, you know, that just shows how good McClanahan is, and I'm not really worried at all. But about Chris Sale here, you know, obviously valuing and whether you want to roster Chris Sale kind of comes down to your kind of contention window here. Obviously, if you're a rebuild, you know, Chris Sale doesn't really make a lot of sense. But if you were a contending team here, Chris, and obviously we haven't really seen Chris Sale be both healthy and productive since, what, 2019? I think 19. It was. Yeah. Would you be willing to kind of, you know, trade for him and then buy back in to kind of help your, you know, push for the, you know, whether it's the playoffs or the money or a championship? Are you okay with acquiring a Chris Sale right now?
Yeah, I definitely am. When he pitches, he's elite. The problem is hasn't been healthy. He's dealt with all kind of stuff. But yeah, I'm certainly intrigued if he is healthy. And even if not, like, I think even if you get a decent, you know, let's say he gets 120 innings, like, I really do think that he's going to provide value for you. And even if I will say, like, even if you're not a win now, if you're a rebuilder, if you can get him cheap, I probably would, just because if he throws the first half of the season is really good, some team's going to overpay for him at the trade deadline, which is going to create an opportunity for you to really capitalize on that and cash out. So I think he's viable for any dynasty team, because I do really believe that when Sale pitches, he's a top 10 arm. Like, we've seen that over and over and over again. So, yeah, I am certainly in on him. If, you know, regardless of whatever your team build is, I would look to get him right now.
Yeah, I'm kind of there with you. I don't think, despite, you know, maybe it's my Red Sox fan in me coming out and how annoyed I've been with Chris Sale over the last few years, but I don't know if, you know, ace Chris Sale is walking through that door, but hey, maybe SP2 Chris Sale is walking through that door. And yeah, if you can, first off, as a Red Sox fan, if we got 120 innings out of Sale this year, I'd be doing a happy dance all the way down to Lansdowne straight outside of Fenway Park. So that would be awesome, you know? And the positive thing, I guess, if you can take a positive out of this, is that a lot of these have been sort of random fluke injuries. How do you break a rib throwing a baseball? You know, the comebacker, you know, it's been a lot of almost like Tatis, where it's just like a lot of like random crap that isn't necessarily related to baseball all the time. So, you know, hopefully there's no recurring, you know, thing here from some of these issues. So, yeah, I think you could see, you know, maybe he's like AL Clayton Kershaw, where it's like, all right, 130-ish innings, give or take, you know, 10, 15 innings either way, you know, pretty good ratios, a good K rate, and maybe he's just kind of going to be that. I think they're both pretty close in age, with 33, 34 in that range. So, you know, maybe that's kind of where he settles in as is like a really good SP2, SP3 that probably will continue to be a little bit undervalued just because of the risk. But if he can get, just get 120 innings, I think you're getting a solid return on investment there. Moving over to Matt, a couple of, you know, not big names that have, but some young names with some promise that just haven't looked good so far this spring. Luis Ortiz in Pittsburgh, Matt Manning from the Detroit Tigers. Let's start with Manning, Chris. Like with him, velocity was down. The production is, you know, has not been good so far. Through two outings, 3 1/3 innings, 7 hits, 5 earned runs, only 3 strikeouts so far. This is a guy that ever since he kind of reached peak value back when he was like him and Casey Mize were like, boom, that's going to be the next, you know, Glavin and Maddux. But they both kind of, you know, that was like 2019. They both have kind of tanked in value since then. Obviously, Mize being hurt now. But is Manning ever going to be a thing? Like, I'm thinking of that. Was that from Mean Girls that, like, stop trying to make fetch happen? It's not going to happen, that whole gif. Is that the thing with Manning? Like, should we stop? And I've already been fading him pretty hard, but I've been holding out hope. Should we stop holding out hope? Like, is Manning ever going to be a thing, or is he just going to be another guy?
I don't think he's going to be a thing. I'm pretty out on him at this point. Like, don't want anything to do with him. He sits at the bottom of the list of velo, like, fallers. He was down 3.2 miles an hour. Like, that's significant. Not to mention that he drilled Justin Turner in the face. Like,
yeah, that was scary.
Brutal. Yeah, you can't do that to Justin Turner, man. He's great, but I'm just pretty out on Manny at this point. Like, he showed me nothing that I want to see, and that's sad. Like, I've got him on several dynasty teams, and it's like you can't do nothing with him because they're deep leagues. It's not like you can cut him. But it's like you're not going to trade him for a bag of balls. But, man, I'm just pretty much lost all hope on Matt Manning, which is I really hate. Like, I'd love to see him and Mize become something, but I don't really see that right now.
I wonder, I might take a bag of balls right now for Matt Manning. I don't know. It's funny, too, like looking back to like 2019, I'm trying to pull up my archived rankings here. Is, you know, I think a lot of these top pitching prospects, you know, that were, you know, like back then, what was it, like Whitley, Pearson, Mize, Manning, a lot of them have fallen off. So, you know, it's pitching prospects are so risky, man. Like, who would you rather invest in right now, him or Casey Mize? Or neither?
Yeah. Can I say neither? Because I would. I don't know.
Yeah, I would say neither too, but, you know, gun to your head, got to pick one. Who would it be?
I guess Manning, just because Mize is hurt. So that's the only reason I'll say that. Who knows how Mize comes back. At least Manning's pitching. May not be good, but at least he's pitching.
I wonder if Mize turns into like Cal Quantrill 2.0. That might even be best case scenario.
Yeah, I mean, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. I mean, Quantrill's actually fantasy relevant.
Yeah, so, okay, I'm pulling up. Okay, here we go. These are my mid 2019, so it's probably like July or so. I want to see what my top pitching prospects were at that point in time and see where it went. All right. So I had Casey Mize. I'm Mackenzie Gore first overall. Well, for pitching, probably not overall, but he was number 6 overall. But for pitching prospect, I had Gore 1. Still, you know, kind of wait and see on Gore. Mize 2. We already talked about that. Whitley 3. No. 4. Okay. That worked out. Matt Manning 5. Not so much. Brendan McKay 6. Oh, Lord. Dylan C 7. There we go. Pearson 8. Yeah. He hasn't worked out either. Kopech 9. Still wait and see. Luis Patino 10. Still kind of wait and see. So, yeah, a lot. So we get the, what, Lizardo and Cease are the two hits there. Gore and Kopech still kind of to be determined, but, you know, a lot of misses there. And maybe that's, you know, best partially on me. You know, I ranked them there, but I wasn't alone in a lot of those rankings either. So, man, pitching prospects is so volatile. You know, it's hard to, and we're seeing it now with, you know, G-Rod missed a lot of time last year. Painter probably going to miss a lot of time this year. Daniel Espino, you know, hopefully, what can we just put T Tiedemann and Harrison and Yuri Perez and all of them is put them in a bubble so they don't get hurt either. So, but man, it's really tough. But all right, any other, let's see what names we still have on here. Cole Reagans, Chris, increased velo. Are you buying into Reagans like a deep league target?
Yeah, I actually am. Like, he's going so late, like in DCs especially. And obviously in Dynasty, like, he's pretty much an afterthought. So I'm really intrigued here because, you know, the Texas rotation has some injury risk, to say the least. So, like, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he snuck in there. He flashed being a really good prospect at times, obviously dealt with injuries, but he's come back looking really, really strong. So I think that's kind of a sleeper pick when I look at this rotation and see that the youngest one in this rotation is Andrew Heaney. I'm sorry, John Gray, just a slight bit younger. But they have everyone's 31 or older. We know DeGrom can't stay healthy. Eovaldi's had his health issues. Heaney's had his health issues. So there could be some innings there for Cole Reagans. And I'm kind of on board with taking a shot late, and especially in a deep dynasty league, and seeing where it goes. Like, he's not going to start with the team. Like, I don't think there's any question that he's, you know, with the team to start the year. But I think there is a chance that he comes up fairly quickly. He pitched 40 innings with them last year. I think that's pretty important to note. It wasn't great, but again, he was coming back from injury. So I'm not opposed to really taking a shot and seeing where it goes, because he looked really good with what I saw. And he's shown the ability to be pretty good in the past as well. Like, his minors numbers overall are pretty good.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that. He has a career 29.4% strikeout rate in the minor leagues. And obviously, he had a very, you know, putrid K rate last year. Only had 27 Ks in 40 innings. But again, he's shown that ability in the past. You know, walk rates used to be an issue for him. Like, low minors was a huge issue. But upper minors, he got that walk rate down a bit. 2022 was down to only 31 walks and 94 and two-thirds innings. That was around 8% walk rate. So, you know, he's made some improvements from, you know, low minors to upper minors. I think he was a guy that, and he missed a lot of time too. Like, he had a 4-year gap. Because he had, I forget if it was Tommy John or shoulder surgery, I can't remember exactly. Mm-hmm. He had like major surgeries and then lost 2020. So he went from 2017 to 2021 without pitching a game and was a kind of a new guy once he came back. So kind of used that time off to really reinvent himself, improve his strike throwing ability. So yeah, with all the, this is a talented Texas rotation, but as you alluded to, it is a risky one with a lot of injury risk in basically everybody there. So, you know, I think he's going to get a chance, and you know, maybe we see him go over 100 innings this year. So, yeah, definitely has some appeal for sure. But that is going to wrap us up. Thank you to everyone for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Again, you can follow all of our written stuff over at Patreon for me, Substack for Chris. And, of course, please drop a 5-star rating and review. Those do mean a lot. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. And join us again probably tomorrow or the next day. We'll get that hitter episode out very soon. A lot of fun stuff to talk about in that episode as well. But until then, everyone take care.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.